Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, November 13th, 2025. We'll start with a story titled Mission K-9 Warrior Provides Service Dogs for Qualified Veterans. And this is written by, and it says Saving Lives. This is written by Christy Jankowski. Fighting veteran suicide with service animals has led to saving 40 lives since 2016, according to Dave Hughes, founder of Mission K-9 Warrior. I will tell you, we have almost 40 with dogs right now, 40, and none of them have taken their life. So we've already beat the stats, said Hughes about their program. The mission provides service dogs for qualified veterans. The service dog is specially trained for the veteran, Hughes said. You may have a veteran who doesn't like to go into a dark room. That dog may be trained to turn the light on for the veteran. Hughes said the pups are also trained for those who suffer from night tremors. The dog will be trained to bring that veteran to wake up, nudge him, to lick his face, whatever it takes, Hughes said. And for me, I can finally sit in a restaurant and my back can be toward the door. How about that? Many veterans struggle with being hypersensitive to their surroundings and to have unique PTSD triggers. He's perfect. I mean, he really is perfect for me, he said. I got so irritated at things, and pretty soon he's doing something. He's nudging me, getting me to hold him, and finally I look at him and start laughing. Wow, but yeah, these dogs are pretty incredible, and it does work. Marine veteran Tim Dippin has a service dog from the organization. Dippin's said his dog has helped him regain trust again. My dog is my life. He's like my superhero sidekick. He's my medication, my best friend, my sixth sense, my security blanket. I'd save him from a fire before any other being, Dippin said. He alerts me when I get elevated or triggered. I used to tense up really badly and go towards that aggressive chaos. Dippin said his dog therapy and hard work have changed everything. He's the real life practical application for all I've learned regarding emotional regulation, empathy, and compassion, he said. Army veteran Chris Irwin said his Tusky keeps him in reality. She helps me when I'm driving and having a PTSD trigger moment, Irwin said. She helps me go out to the public events when I used to not leave the house. And the guys and the dogs really do go everywhere with the veterans. There are some of our guys who haven't been to a concert in years, and they put earmuffs on the dog and they take it to a concert, Hughes said. However, the dogs do have time for some off-duty fun. They're lovable, but they're crazy. I mean, nuts, because they have to hunt. They got to do something. He likes that, Hughes said of his German short-haired pointer. But you put that vest on, he's on duty, and he knows that he is. It's incredible to watch him. The organization is about to celebrate 10 years of service to the community as they were founded in 2016 following a string of suicides. Think about a little organization like ours, a bunch of knucklehead veterans, he said. None of us gets paid, but we're all volunteers. We don't wear suits, and here we are working. That shows you in less than 10 years, that shows how hard we work. As for how the organization keeps running, it's all fundraising, according to Hughes. We get, let's say, 4 or 5 applications in and say 3 of them qualify. At the moment, we might have just enough for 3 dogs, but we got those 3 veterans taken care of. Then we're down to 0, he said, so we have to raise more money for the next applicants. Currently, Hughes said the dogs cost around $20,000. Hughes is deeply impacted by veteran suicide, as his wife, Marguerite, lost her father to suicide when she was 12 years old. They would much rather have their broken dad, their broken son, their broken, veteran and with them and to get help and then not have them when there's no chance at all, Hughes said about how a suicide death impacts loved ones. Hughes added that the hope that dogs bring is why he does it. we do it because of the love of our brothers and sisters and mainly of their families, because we do not want their families to experience it, Hughes said. It's incredible to see the veteran and the dog meet for the first time. Oh my gosh, it's crazy. The first five or six, I cried every time. Now it's like, you just smile. As for how he keeps going, he said when it's when veterans tell him their service dog saved their life, he knows his job has purpose. That was enough to keep me going, Hughes said. You know, to know there's another family. They're going to have their daddy. They're going to have their husband, you know? Getting the word out is part of the battle. The public needs to be familiarized with this. We're not monsters. We're not monsters, Hughes said. You know, people think that PTSD, you go out and you kill people. That's not it, really. It's not it. Yeah, it's an external harm. It's an internal harm. The nonprofit is hosting a black tie fundraiser planned by Marguerite Hughes. Normally we have them at the fairgrounds, he said. We would have a band, food, silent auctions and stuff, but that's a lot of work, and we wanted to do something different. Let's have people dress up and look pretty, you know, Hughes' wife said to him. I said, that sounds cool. Let's do that. That was her dream, so we put her in charge of it, and she's rocked it. The event is sold out. However, there are always a need of donations to keep getting dogs to veterans. If you're interested in donating, send a check to 106 East West Street in Georgetown. They ask you to write the checks to Mission Canine Warrior. You can also donate online at www.missionk-9warrior.org/donate. And there's several pictures. There's a picture of Army veteran Neil Stevens with his service dog from Canine Warrior Missions on his motorcycle. And there's a picture of Army veteran Chris Irwin with his husky, a service dog who helps him with his PTSD battle. And then Marine veteran Tim Dippin with his service dog from Canine Mission Warriors. And Mission Canine Warrior founder and Coast Guard veteran David Hughes with his service dog. Army, and then one more, Army veteran Heather Nasser with her service dog from Mission Canine Warriors. That's kind of neat. Next story is titled, Community Meeting Set for Viscofan Health Impacts, and again written by Christy Jankowski, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but anyway, it's in Danville. A community meeting is being hosted by Hunter Brook Law in Luxembourg, PC, for the public to discuss potential legal options concerning health and property impacts from Viscofan. This meeting will begin at 6 p.m. Thursday at Rabbit Town Trade Center, which is located off College Street in Danville. Previous employee of Viscofan, Brandy Lake, who worked from 2020 to 2023, claims she was let go because her questions about what she says were safety violations. We're supposed to tell supervisors when the gas levels are too high so that they can evacuate the workers that are in that area, Lake said. But they don't. They don't tell the workers when the gas levels are too high. And so I started going to the safety person about it and asking lots of questions. They didn't like it. Lake said during her time as an employee of Viscofan, she noticed several odd symptoms from what she says are unhealthy chemical and gas levels in the plant. The workers that work there are covered in it, she said. You could be off work for a whole week and you're still sweating it out of your pores. If you have white sheets when you take a shower and everything, and you sweat, your sheets are turned yellow and orange from the viscofan leaving your body, claimed Lake about how the product for hot dog casings is leaving a mark in current employees. Lake said following some media attention to the issue from Hunt Brook Media, another reporter, Monique Zamora, reached out to her. I have had another reporter from Spain contact me and ask me questions about the investigation because the viscofan plant in Spain is doing the same things that Viscofan here is doing, and it's poisoning their community as well, Lake said. There are similar claims in Zamora's piece to Lake's. Lake said her grandfather, Clinton Lake, died from brain cancer. She attributes his 15 years of employment of the plant as to why he had cancer. My grandfather, for instance, Lake said, my grandfather worked there for 30 years. 15 years later, he dies from brain cancer. Hunter Brook Media will also present at the meeting, will be present at the meeting. The investigative group has interviewed multiple former workers of Viscofan, with the majority of them stating there are numerous health problems. And there's a couple pictures here. There's a picture of Viscofan located on North Michigan Avenue in Danville is the topic of a community meeting Thursday at the Rabbit Town Trade Center hosted by Hunter Brook Law and Luxembourg PC. And then Sandy Blunier, HR manager for Viscofan in Danville, said the company has no comment to give about the meeting or any health claims citizens are making. Next story is titled Pile Statue Unveiled in Dana, and it's written by David Kronk and CNHI News in Indiana, in Dana, Indiana. This will be one of my most proud moments, artist Bill Wolf said of his sculpture of legendary World War II correspondent Ernie Pyle. Wolf's sculpture was unveiled Tuesday morning on the grounds of the Ernie Pyle Ward World War II Museum in Dana in Vermilion County. Due to temperatures hovering in the 30s, much of the dedication took place down the street in the volunteer fire department right alongside the fire trucks. Steve Kay, president of the Friends of Ernie Pyle Development Fund, which operates the museum, declared there could be no better day than Veterans Day to honor Ernie. He welcomed the veterans in the crowd of approximately 150 people, a turnout he called wonderful. Phil Hess read a column Pyle wrote in May of 1943. I love the infantry and the underdogs, Pyle wrote, describing the inhuman Houston of weary soldiers who, despite their youth, appeared to be middle-aged as they marched. They went a long way down a road that does not come back, Pyle's column concluded. When Wolf then recalled his own association with Pyle goes back years. He said that when he revealed his first sculpture around 2001, someone advised him to start working on an early Pyle piece, as Wolf certainly was going to be asked to make one. He fashioned a small clay model of Pyle, and when no order appeared to be forthcoming, he stored it, and it melted. Singer-songwriter Jack Shannon debuted his song Ernie. The chorus went, he was just a farm boy, but only for a while. Soon the world would come to know the name of Ernie Pyle. Key said this unveiling event had sent him over the moon, and he was enthusiastic about Wolf's creation. Bill is a wonderful sculptor. I really believe he went beyond catching Ernie's likeness, but he also be able to get his personality, he said. There is a little smirk on it, Ernie's face. He's like he's kind of amused by the whole bit of attention to him. The sculpture was funded, Key said, by people all over the country, routinely sending $50, $100. It's been a process. That's what's great about it. It's grassroots, Wolf said. This is one of my last pieces, the sculpture added. So this one, I think, I'm really proud of. This is one where I felt like I was the one to do it. Pyle's storytelling skills, which focused on the grunts fighting with the frontline battles, earned him a Pulitzer Prize in 1944. His advocacy over combat battle led to Congress passage that same year of the Ernie Pyle Bill, which established the policy of paying troops in combat zones an extra amount. That policy continues today. When World War II began, 176,000 soldiers were enlisted in the Army. By war's end, the number had grown to 16 million. In Dana, 10,000 people worked to build a TNT plant. The statue represents phase one in a project that will become the Ernie Pyle and Veterans Memorial Park adjacent to Pyle's birthplace and museum. Rockville, Indiana. Architect Luke Waltz designed the park based on local residents' thoughts of how it should look. Permanent restrooms with accessibility compliant to the Americans with Disabilities Act will be installed north of the museum. The museum at 120 Briarwood Avenue in Dana does not charge visitors admission. Days of operation are limited, though efforts are made to accommodate visitors who reach out in advance for a tour. More information is at www.erniepyle.org. David Kronk is a reporter with a Tribune Star in Terre Haute, Indiana, and can be reached at 812-231-4232 or at David Kronk, K-R-O-N-K, at tribstar.com. And there's a picture of sculpture. Bill Wolf bows his head with others in attendance as Taps is played during the unveiling ceremony for the new Ernie Pyle statue on Tuesday in Dana, Indiana. Okay, there's just one obituary today. Suzanne Nild, column 90, died on Thursday, November 6th, 2025, at her home in rural Georgetown. A visitation will be held on Monday, November 17th, from 4 to 7 p.m. CST time at 2025 at Sunset Funeral Homes, Houghton Leisure Chapel, located at 200 East West Street in Georgetown, Illinois. The funeral will take place on Tuesday, November 18th at 10 a.m. CST time, also at the funeral home. She will be buried at Whitlock Cemetery next to Larry following the services. Fond memories and online condolences can be shared on their wall. Next story is titled Kuchen Broad Inducted into Hall of Fame, and this again is written by Christy Jankowski in Danville. A Danville executive director is inducted into the United States Chamber of Commerce Talent Pipeline Management Hall of Fame. Downtown Danville Incorporated announced it in a press release that Kim Kuchen Broad earned the award through her dedication to helping others. Kim's leadership has helped make Danville and I the state of Illinois a model for community-driven workforce development, said Kindred Lott's son, president of Downtown Danville Incorporated. She continues to inspire others by connecting people, programs, and purpose. Tillis Dunn said this particular Hall of Fame honor is given to those who bring life back to the cities they had live and work in, which is something Downtown Danville Incorporated has done through Vermilion County's local economy. She said it was possibly through TPM. By connecting local employers, training providers, and entrepreneurs, Tillston said TPM strategies support small business growth, attract new investment, and ensure that the district's redevelopment is sustained by a strong and well-prepared workforce. This approach not only builds talent pipelines for local industries, but also fuels the downtown's long-term economic vitality. Kuchen Broad is the founder of Talent Flow Strategies, founded in 2022. Next story is titled Boughton Accepted into Illinois Veterinary College. This is in Urbana. Lillian Boughton, daughter of Donna and David Boughton of Indianola, has been accepted to the University of Illinois College of Veteran Medicine in Urbana. Admission to the college, which is one of only 34 veterinary schools in the nation, is highly competitive. Criteria for acceptance include grade point average, admissions test scores, background and experience, and personal interviews. Boughton is one of 160 members entering the class of 2029. Boughton's class will participate in an innovative veterinary curriculum taught only at the College of Veterinary Medicine at Illinois, called the Illinois Integrated Veterinary Professional Curriculum. Throughout the four-year program leading to the Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree, coursework in anatomy, physiology, and other sources is highly integrated with clinical material and focused on preparing new graduates for clinical practice. In fact, Boughton said and her classmates will spend 8 weeks during the first semester of the program engaging in clinical areas of veterinary practice rather than attending lectures and laboratories. After graduation, Bowden must also pass state and national board examinations covering knowledge of companion and food animal medicine in order to become licensed to practice. Bowden graduated from Georgetown Ridge Farm High School in 2021. She earned a bachelor's degree in equine pre-veterinary science from St. Mary of the Woods College in Indiana in December of 2024. As an undergraduate, Bowden was named the St. Mary's Mother Theodore Guerin Scholar and was on the Dean's High List highest honors. Sounds like she's pretty good. Next story is titled, Bailey Stays in Governor's Race, and this is written by Brendan Moore in Capital News in Illinois, Springfield. Less than 3 weeks after a helicopter crash claimed the lives of his son, daughter-in-law, and two grandchildren, Darren Bailey said late Monday that he will move forward with his campaign for governor. After a lot of prayer and reflection, Cindy and I have decided we're staying in the race for governor, not for politics, but for every family trying to make it in a state that's lost its way, for every parent who dreams a better future for their children, and for every Illinoisan who knows that we can do better, Bailey said in a nearly 3-minute video recorded with his wife and posted to his social media accounts. Bailey said he received encouragement from President Donald Trump to keep fighting and stayed in the race. That's exactly what we're going to do, he said. So I'm asking you, stand with us, pray with us, fight with us, Bailey said, grasping his wife Cindy's hand. Together we can bring back common sense, honesty, and leadership that serves real people again. Together we will save Illinois' future. Zachary Kelsey, Samuel Finn, and Veda Rose Bailey's second campaign for governor had been in doubt after his son Zachary, daughter-in-law Kelsey, and two grandchildren, 12-year-old Veda Rose and 7-year-old Samuel, died when the helicopter Zachary was piloting crashed in Montana on October 22nd. The couple's 10-year-old son Finn was not on board at the time. The crash is being investigated by National Transportation Safety Board. Hardest days of our lives. The campaign filed petitions in late October to secure a spot on the March 17th primary ballot, but running mate Aaron Del Mar told reporters at the time that Bailey was taking time to think about whether to proceed with the campaign. Bailey, a farmer and former state legislator, won the 2022 GOP gubernatorial nomination but lost the general election to Democrat Governor J.B. Pritzker by nearly 13 percent points. He later unsuccessfully challenged U.S. Representative Mike Best, Republican of Murfreesboro, in 2024, losing that primary election by under 3,000 votes. With high name recognition among Republican voters, Bailey starts as the favorite of the 2026 primary against six lesser-known candidates. They include former conservative think tank executive Ted Dabrowski, video gambling tycoon Rick Heidner, and DuPage County Sheriff James Mendrick. Pritzker is seeking a third term as the state's chief executive. Bailey acknowledged that the past few weeks have been the hardest days of our lives, but that he and his wife have been lifted by the many well-wishers and their evangelical faith. He said the tragedy changed their lives forever, but it's also reminded us why we fight. His late son and daughter-in-law, he said, believed in the Illinois where farmers could build a future without being crushed by the bad government and broken promises. We've all been through tough times, Bailey said, but what makes Illinois special are the people who don't quit, the ones who work hard, help their neighbors, and believe tomorrow can be a better. That's who I'm fighting for. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. If it It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. You can reach Capital News Illinois on the following social media outlets: Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And there's a picture of Darren Bailey and his wife, Cindy, announced that he will stay with the governor's race in a three-minute video posted to social media. He was contemplating his next move after his son, daughter-in-law, and two grandchildren died in a helicopter crash. Just run through a couple of sports things real quick. Local roundup. DACC gets past Illinois Wesleyan. And this is written by Marvin Holman in Danville. The Danville Area Community College men's basketball team saw itself down 42-35 at halftime against the Illinois Wesleyan JV team on Tuesday. But the Jaguars would battle back in the second half and came away with an 82-81 win at Mary Miller Gym. Blake Reed had 19 with 5 assists for DACC, while A.P. Mitchell had 18 points with 8 rebounds. Jeremiah Panawaz had 16 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. And Deshaun Clark had 14 points, 5 steals, and 8 assists. The Jaguars will hit the road to play Lincoln Trail on Saturday. And prep girls basketball, Fountain Central 46 and Clinton Central 35 in Michigan Town, Indiana. Kendall Nolan had 16 points as the Mustangs got the win on the road on Tuesday. Citrus Wesley had 8 points, 7 rebounds, and 2 steals for Fountain Central, while Aubrey Ashwell had 8 points and 5 rebounds. Henley Good had 7 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 steals, and Bella Bacon had 7 points and 6 rebounds. The Mustangs will face Faith Christian on Friday. Run through the community briefs real quick. SNAP Resource Fair at Danville Area CC. Vermilion County Works, the Illinois Department of Human Services, and Illinois Department of Employment Security are hosting a SNAP Work Requirement Resource Fair at Danville Area Community College's Bremer Theater on Thursday. There will be 2 sessions, one at 9 a.m. and one at 2 p.m. SNAP Work rules are changing. Illinois adults ages 18 to 64 without dependents must complete 80 hours a month in work, volunteering, or training to keep benefits. The SNAP Fair will bring together partner resources to help individuals explore pathways to build skills, stay compliant, and move toward lasting self-sufficiency. One option in training education, DACC offers a variety of short-term certificate and career training programs that meet the new federal SNAP requirements. Adults can choose from options in healthcare, manufacturing, technology, and public service fields that qualify as approved job training activities. Many programs can be completed in less than a year and lead directly to employment. Vermilion County Works staff can help individuals understand the new requirements and the new ways DACC can be useful to them. Registration is currently underway for the spring 2026 semester. Information about programs and course schedules will be available at the Resource Fair. And Christmas concert set for November 22nd, the Vermilion County Festival Chorus will be performing an arrangement of traditional Christmas carols during their concert, The Joy of Christmas, at 2 p.m. on Saturday, November 22nd. The concert will be held at St. James United Methodist Church, located at 504 North Vermilion in Danville. Admission is free, but donations are requested, with a portion of the donations going to the OSF Bobette Stille Hagler Cancer Care Center. The concert is sponsored by the Julius W. Hagler II Foundation. And Lacey to speak for the Lions Club. Jacqueline Lacey, Vermilion County State's Attorney, will speak to the Danville Lions Club on Thursday. The Lions Club meets at Spanky's Banquet, located at 409 East Main Street in Danville. And lighting ceremony set for Saturday. Downtown Danville will sparkle with magic beginning at 5 p.m. on Saturday, November 15th, at annual Downtown Danville lighting ceremony. Event highlights include the official lighting in the downtown at 5:30, and Santa will be in Tampa Plaza from 5 to 6 p.m. New this year is the holiday photo contest. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, November 13th, 2025. Looks like it's going to be a good weekend in the 70s, and the Illini has a game here in town, so might want to stay in. Anyway, hope you all have a good week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care.